Justin, we have an incredible announcement for the people. Tell them.
Big announcement coming. Austin, Texas, this November, the second Intentional Fatherhood Retreat. We are pumped. What dates, Brooke?
November 12th through the 14th, you can join us in Austin, Texas for a weekend to get away and to be refreshed and transformed as a father. Tell the people what they can expect, Justin.
We're going to have incredible worship. We're going to have great teaching. We're going to have a community of dads all coming together, not just to hear a biblical framework on how to live intentionally as a father, but also to be equipped with tons of practical habits and help on how to do that. Most of all, though, this is the kind of thing where you come into a community of dads who are all trying to follow Jesus into fatherhood together. And let me tell you guys, this will change your life. So we want you there.
Come out, go get your tickets at intentionalfatherhood.org. You can get all of your tickets there. And please, again, join us. Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast, where we explore what it means to live on purpose as a father and how legacy starts at home. I'm Justin Whitmore Early.
And I'm Brooke Moser. We'll be your hosts, and we desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Thanks for listening. Yo. Okay, wait. This needs to be on air. This needs to be on air.
We are on air. Are we live? All right.
Okay,
we're live. Call it in the air.
But wait, hold on. I don't know what I'm calling. I didn't know the difference.
Just heads or tails?
Heads.
Tails. Welcome back to season three of the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast. I am Justin Early introducing here because I won the coin toss. This is my main man, Brooke Moser.
Here I am.
And we are coming with the last episode in this, frankly, series. I've enjoyed it. Incredible season on work and vocation. We're talking about legacy in your work today. Legacy, culture shaping, the memories you pass on, and your unfinished symphonies. They all have to do with what you leave behind in your work.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get there, Brooke, tell them what they should do.
Oh, you do lots of stuff. I mean, let's keep it to the podcast. What you could do with this podcast specifically would be to rate, subscribe, even leave a comment. It's a great way to communicate and share it with friends. We also encourage, we say this every week, but it's important to remind you, if you do listen to this solo, that's okay. But also then talk to friends about it or get together with friends, process it together. Doing this in community is a lot easier.
Some people say smash that like and subscribe button, but we make it spiritual. You should do this because better for your Christian life.
Well, this also isn't just a podcast about us sitting down and talking about rando stuff. So this is a formational, you know, our hope is that this would be a formational tool for your fatherhood. Mm. So it isn't just a casual situation. So this, even though you're receiving it through the medium that you might receive comedy, it's actually a deeper, hopefully different thing. And so yes, please do that. And then also, if you have any questions, please send those. You can email hello@intentionalfatherhood.org and you can send a voice memo if you'd like. 1 minute, 60 seconds would be great. Your name, where you're from, let us know. Mm. And we have a lot of things happening in the intentional fatherhood world. So go to intentionalfatherhood.org, check out all that's happening, different events we have going on around the country, different things that are happening.
Different events where you could come hang out with us and other dads and also get one of these stickers that I have on my AeroPress mug.
Look at that wolf. Maybe by the time, maybe we'll have our own engraved cup by that time.
Hey, do you think when people see us in November in Austin, we'll have the 2415 tattoo yet?
That's going to be up to you because I would have gotten it 6 months ago. But
All right. If some of you don't know this, at our last conference, some dudes, now epically known as the Thigh Guys.
Thigh Guys.
They tattooed 2415 on their thighs in the hotel room with an Amazon bought tattoo gun. I think
the story keeps
the first time they'd ever done this.
The story keeps getting more legend in
Let it be.
But
let it be legend.
I will say this: 2415 is from Joshua 2415. That's for me in my house. And so, yes, it's a meaningful number. And I'm so glad they did it. And there was their way to kind of bond over and have a covenant friendship and say, here's our mark.
And you think I'm just having fun talking about our merch and the conference and how cool this design is. But if people do look at this sticker, they're going to see 2415, Intentional Fatherhood, the wolf. And around the wolf, they're going to see four words. Legacy begins at home.
Absolutely.
We are talking about legacy because our great hope for you in being an intentional father is that you leave a legacy.
Mm.
Changing generations to come. Gosh, I love it. Have you ever heard Ray Ortlund and his wife talk about generational change? They have this wonderful,
not specifically,
just
but
they got a book on this. They have, I've heard their talk on it. It's this beautiful idea of not just thinking about your kids and the impact you're having on them, but thinking out to the 10th generation and how many people that actually is.
Yes, yes. We do that with intentional, actually.
It's so good.
It's so good. Yeah, like you add the numbers of if your family multiplied even just half in faith, like how many people to reach.
It quickly becomes hundreds and thousands and
millions.
By 10?
10 generations? I think it's 12 generations. It's in the millions, I think is what it is.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of kids.
Yeah.
I love it. So we can't think about our work in our silo of our life. This is for God, it's for neighbor, it's for our family.
Mm-hmm.
We need to think generationally. We need to think about leaving legacy. Or as our friend Janto puts it, legacy.
Janto, we love you, bro.
We love you, Janto.
Let's set this up.
Yeah, you
set
start
this
us up? In.
Yeah, a couple start of things to just highlight. This is biblical. Like, we all know this, but as we are kind of winding down this particular season around this concept of vocation, work, passion, calling, all that stuff, there's a bigger thing to just focus on as we step into other topics. And that is that this isn't just for you. And in many ways, it's never was for you, which is a good, good thing to remember. A couple just foundational things, even just theology of this. Deuteronomy 6 is an incredible understanding of what it looks like to actually practically, when you lie down, when you wake up, when you walk along the way, basically just passing on your faith. The idea like legacy is a very daily situation. You're passing on who you are through your kids. You have Psalm 78, which I love. Psalm 78:4 will tell the next generation of the goodness of God. There's a handful of different translations, but that's that idea that your job is to actually inform the next generation and show them and help them and equip them and build them up to be able to do it. You have a responsibility. And then just another verse, but again, I think this is, I'll spend a little bit more time here, is Proverbs 13:22. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. And I want to highlight, we hear that word inheritance, and in our modern culture, obviously we think money. And of course, actually that is a part of it, but it is only one of a few things. It's not just money. You also want to leave the inheritance of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
You want to leave the inheritance of faith.
Reputation.
I was going to say patterns. Yep. Like you want to leave the inheritance of a good life. What does it look like to live a good life? Back in season 2, we talked about this concept, 2 different episodes of giving your death away. This is a part of that. And if you're noting or kind of noticing like, oh, they're ending most of their conversations with this idea of how does this not just stay with us?
Mm-hmm.
And that's very intentional. And that is because it doesn't just ever stay with you and it should never stay with you. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to talk about, how legacy isn't later, it's actually right now. It starts right now. Your legacy and how you're doing this is today. And so—
And it starts in the— I love that you called this the ordinary stuff of legacy, Deuteronomy 6.
Yes.
Legacy begins at home. Again, that's on our sticker. That's on our tagline.
Mm-hmm.
Legacy is not for later. And it's also not for the extraordinary decisions. Legacy is left now in ordinary stuff that you're doing to build something that is beyond you, which only God and the people of God can help you build. Mm. Can't do it alone.
Cannot do it alone. And I think that is what we want to just focus on today, because there are so many different things that you could focus on. And when you take your eyes off of yourself and you start to recognize that this is a part of a bigger thing, not just your work. I mean, it's your whole life you're wanting to pass on. So that's what we're going to highlight today. We want to talk about that idea. We want to talk about unfinished symphonies. Justin, take this next part.
We're going to talk about this in the form of 3 questions.
Yes.
And we're going to kind of rotate and move between them for the rest of this episode. Question number 1, what are you building? Question number 2, what can you never finish building? Question number 3, what does it feel like to live with you while you're building this? All right, so let me just draw those out a little bit and then we're going to dive in. I like these questions.
I love these questions. I really like these.
What are you building? Institutionally, what are you doing? What are you creating? What are you hoping for? What are you leaving behind? This is, we're going to explore the idea of dreaming about things that last longer than you, building things that are bigger than your time horizon. If you're only doing something that can be accomplished right now in this lifetime, your dreams probably are not big enough. Okay. What are you building? But number two, what can you never build? All of life, when you zoom out, is an unfinished symphony. We got to get comfortable with the humility that we actually can't achieve our dreams, but with God and the people of God, his dreams can be achieved. And then third, what does it feel like to live with you while you're doing these things? We're going to try to get you to think from your wife's perspective, from your kid's perspective, from your friend's perspective. We don't want you to live a life of success when you are miserable to be around. We don't want you to live a life of success that is not sanctified.
Yeah, and it turns out no one else does either.
And it turns out no one else does. No one cares. What we want you to do is have a great hope in what you're building, with a great humility of what you never can build, that makes you a Jesus-like presence to be around while you go about doing it. So let's start with the first one. What are you building?
Yes.
Can I dive in just a second here?
Please, you should.
One of my great friends, Drew, I don't know where he got it from, but he often says this, that if your goals can be accomplished in this generation, they're probably too small. I really like the idea of thinking about your vocation and your great hopes for life, what you're building. And this might be the church you're building. This might be, for me, it's Avoda Legal, a law firm I'm building. For me, it is the books I'm writing. I often think not, how is this book going to launch? I genuinely ask myself, is this book going to be read 50 years from now? Is this book going to be read 100 years from now? And, yes. And you might, like, you hear that and you're like, how arrogant. Well, yeah, maybe not. but this is the framework I'm thinking about. I'm like, am I creating a legacy of writing? Am I creating a legacy of legal work that can outlast me? Some of this is the idea of building institutions. And I think this is worth you all thinking about and following up on. There's more here than we can unpack.
Yes.
But two books that have been very, very helpful for me are Yuval Levine's A Time to Build. And actually, I actually don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right.
Yeah.
Recent Writer is a great book. It's about institutional collapse in our generation, why everybody's losing faith in government institutions and cultural institutions, why everyone's distrusting the establishment. And he talks from a Christian perspective on how tragic that is. Because institutions outlast us. They do a lot more than we can. And he talks about the inversion right now of how people, unfortunately, now use institutions as their personal platform.
Yes.
Instead of using institutions to build things that serve other people. So
yes, say that.
Many of the great things that have kept American culture, but also Western culture, culture at large together, are institutions that become norms for people. These are powerful. These are worth building. These are bigger than you. And it is the antithesis of building your personal brand and platform in your life. It means building something that will outlast you. Second book that is worth checking out here. I have disagreements with it. I don't accept it wholesale, but James Davidson Hunter's To Change the World.
Oh yes, I've seen this, yes.
This came out about—
It was about 10?
17 years ago. I think it was like 2009, 10.
Is it like a— I know exactly.
Yeah, it's like a gray cover.
I have it. Yes. Yes.
It's really interesting.
It is the one I'm thinking.
So he does battle against the idea of the culture wars against— I have some bones to pick with his way of thinking of it. But he basically says a defensive posture against culture is not enough. A relevant posture to culture is not enough. We need to be doing things that actually build and shape culture. This is kind of like Andy Crouch's culture making, but he takes it to a level of how does culture actually work? And I'm saying all this because his big claim is that the way that Christianity will actually, quote unquote, change the world is when Christians intermesh themselves to lasting institutions and become influencers within those institutions. So we tend to think either grassroots, like create a burning grassroots movement, or we tend to think like celebrity culture, like get really popular. And he's saying, you know, both of these things do shape moments, but what shapes culture in the long term is institutions. And so Christians should be deeply embedded in them, doing redemptive work in them. He calls this faithful presence. If you heard a couple episodes ago on giving, Laura and I have a giving category called Faithful Presence, where we think about how are we helping shape culture through our giving. So I know that's a little bit upstream, but it's really important for you to think. It's really important for you to think.
Yes.
And you should be thinking, if you want to think about how your vocation affects the world, you need to be thinking about it institutionally. What are you building?
Mm.
I mean, before we go on to question two, just really quick, I hope you think about this for intentional, right? Like, what does intentional become as a family ministry?
Yeah.
You know, focus on the family as an institution that shaped the generation before us.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm so grateful for it.
Yep.
Even though I have some peccadilloes, you know, that I might be like, well, this and that. But like, I would hope, you know, that you all are thinking, and frankly, I love partnering with you guys. I want to be a part of it, of creating another institution that shapes a generation of families.
Yeah. I mean, that as you're talking, it's of no probably surprise that that is very much a part of our heart. And when I say our heart, I mean, like, we have to ask a different question as well. Like, what is God wanting to do through your institution? What is God wanting to do through intentional as an institution for his kingdom and glory? Like, Avoda could be something that's completely servicing those in this generation financially and then done as soon as it's done, if it's not set up the right way,
right?
If it's not led the right way, if it's not actually, you think about that now, way before you ever even have to give up authority, you're already thinking about how is it going to outlast me? So for us, similarly, I think it's important to think that way. I want to say something before I actually talk about a couple details on that. Certain things are not supposed to live beyond certain time cycles. So I think it's important to also say the reverse of this, although I don't want it to in any way like counter our point, because it's not a counter. There are certain things that are supposed to be for that generation and then be done. And then there's certain things that are supposed to live on. And I think sometimes there is a real, real, real tension when certain things that you want it to live beyond you, but it's actually meant for that in that moment. Mm. Now, again, this is really tricky to say. I think you actually build it to be able to have that. Yeah. But I mean, sometimes that I'm saying
you're already forecasting question two. What about our unfinished symphony?
So well, we'll get there. So exactly. I don't want to mess with that too much, but it is to say, like, for us, we are thinking about that. We're praying about that. How can intentional think through how to help marriages and fathers and mothers and parents for this generation, but really actually my kids and their kids and their kids. And if we think this right, we pray this right, we set it up right, there's very real possibility for that to happen. I'll also say, I think it is really interesting. David is spoken about in Acts 13, 36. And I love this phrase said about David. It says, David fulfilled God's purposes in his generation, and then he fell asleep. And I love this, for fall asleep is Bible for dead. He died.
It's Bible for dead.
It's Bible for dead. I'm just telling you, just in case you're like, whoa, he took a nap. No, he died. But here was my favorite phrase. David fulfilled God's purposes in his generation. Ironically, God's purposes in his generation lived way beyond David's generation, if that makes sense. But I think a safe thing to think through as you are processing this is, God, what are you? And this is just falling perfectly into what we've been talking about this whole time. God, what have you put me on this planet for the time belt that I exist, for your purposes?
Yeah.
What are God's purposes for you in your generation? When we start thinking that way, praying that way, there is a natural generational impact. Even if the institution you start doesn't live beyond you, your life lives beyond you in that sense. Mm-hmm. And so I think about writing as well. Last thing I'll say is, writing is one of those things. I want to write because I want people, it's the same thing. Like, I want people to be blessed beyond the time that I have on this earth. Mm-hmm. And if I can bless people and reach into decades into the future and help them, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I don't want to just help people now. I want to help people in the future. Not out of ego, but out of like, please, if there's anything that I can help you with, like, you want to help people. And so anyway.
Well, and just to encourage you, call back to episode 3 of this season. Ego and ambition don't have to be the same thing. You can have a great hope that your writings will be read 50, 100 years from now, that intentional will become the next focus on the family or something like that.
Yeah.
That is, it's ego when it's about you, right? That word, ego. I think it's Latin for self, right? It's the remember, the difference between godly ambition and selfish ambition is just that. Is it for you or is it for the love of God and neighbor? And I love your reference to David. I love the humility here. It guides us perfectly into the next point, which is our dreams, big and holy as they may not be God's dreams. And we have to get comfortable with the idea of it not working, of us never being able to do it. So before we leave this first question, you know, what are you building? Note this word hope, right? I want you to have a great hope for what you're building that is different than an anxiety over what you're building. Yes. If you're doing it right, you have hope. Okay, but...
Fathers, we are so excited to let you know of two resources that myself and Justin have been working on. First, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth is available exclusively right now at intentionalparents.org or intentionalfatherhood.org. It is a 31-day guide to help you pray and focus with consistency on your family, your children, helping shape their hearts while God shapes yours. And of course, you've heard about it. Justin's resource, his new book, The Body Teaches the Soul, is available everywhere books are sold. This book is about the 10 essential habits that build a healthy and holy life, habits that strengthen how you lead your home. So we want to just encourage you, if you have not grabbed those resources and those are helpful, please take a moment, get those now, and let's get back to today's episode.
Then the second question, let's flesh this one out. What can you never build? I'll give a couple images here, but the first image you brought up, David, what did he never build?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
You're talking about the temple?
He never got to the temple, right? Okay. His great hope. You got it right.
I was like, is this a trick question?
Super stressful.
I was like, I think temple, I'm pretty confident, but now I'm questioning.
David fulfilled God's purposes. David gets named in the line. David is obviously incredible in so many ways, and he's also super problematic in so many ways. And he never got to build the thing that he did want to build. Some other glimpses of this. One of my favorite stories about Leonardo da Vinci is apparently in the side of one of his journals, he had many, is just written a scrawl of, is anything ever finished? I love that because like a genius mind, someone filled with so much hope and ideas, he also lived with the crippling frustration of like, I have more than I can ever finish. I have more ideas than I can ever finish. One of the best stories that you'll ever read on this, probably many of you have heard it, some of you haven't. It's told often. Tolkien. Tolkien or Tolkien?
it's Hakim.
Tolkien?
Yeah, Hakim.
Got wrote it. The Lord of the Rings. He also wrote a famous little short story called Niggle's Leaf. N-I-G-G-L-E. Niggle's Leaf. Go look it up. He's an artist, this little guy.
Is he little?
I think he is in the story. I don't know if it's the name that makes him sound.
Yeah, I was like, are you saying he's little?
Little.
Got it. Anyway, let's not get distracted.
So let's not get distracted. He's an artist. Yes. He dreams of painting this mural of a tree. In his whole life, he only accomplishes ever painting a leaf. It's very embarrassing to him. And everybody walks by and is like, you know, how's your painting going? And he only ever finishes a leaf. You know, he's kind of a laughingstock.
Yes.
And I don't remember the story exactly, but he dies and he's walking in the new heavens and the new earth in the kingdom in the sweet hereafter in heaven. And he crests a hill. I think he might actually be riding his bike. I can't remember. And he sees this gorgeous tree. And he stops in his tracks. And he's like, oh my gosh, what a beautiful tree. And I think as he's gazing at it, he slowly realizes this was his tree. This was what he was trying to paint his whole life.
Wow.
And he could only ever get out a leaf. But in the new heavens and the new earth, in the city of God, all that he had hoped for was brought to fruition.
Yes.
And I just like live with that story. I think Tolkien wrote it probably in the midst of working on Lord of the Rings and thinking, I think a lot of his friends were worried that he would never finish this story. I think it took him a long time. Hmm. Y'all can fact check me on this. Some of you know way more about Lord of the Rings than I do. But I cherish Da Vinci's journal.
I said nerd. I apologize.
I mean, no, you're not nerds. We love my wife loves Lord of the Rings.
She's
super into it. But she's kind of nerdy. It's great.
Anyway.
Great artists, great builders, great, you know, people of great vocations.
Yes.
Know that there is a huge limit to what they can do. And so they have a huge hope next to a huge humility. They know, I want to build a law firm, but Avoda's still like 20 people. It's like not that
so
big.
Dumb. It's so dumb.
Hey, come on, dude.
It's not. Well, I mean, actually just going to encourage you though, but think about even last year when we started this versus where it is now.
Yeah.
It's been massive growth.
But
I think that's the exact point. Like you're saying, oh, it's only this now, but like think about how much it was from what it was before and how much it can become.
Yeah.
You know, I'm excited for you. And it's not dumb. I love it a lot.
But you have a wrong perspective if you think you can accomplish everything you want to do in your lifetime.
Yes.
So the opposite here is like, it's humility rather than pride. When you realize that all of life is unfinished symphonies, you get comfortable with the nowness of your legacy. Mm-hmm. As in, you might not be able to build what you intend to build, but you can paint a leaf.
Yes.
You can write the first 8 bars of the symphony. You can create the small company. You can... And I think actually I mentioned this on the last episode of old Kirk Christensen, the founder of what became Legos. He never had any idea
of what it was going to be.
I think he would probably be shocked that it's now like a global toy.
Legoland.
His company touches every family in the world. I mean, what kid has not touched a Lego
or heard of it? At least.
You know, what kid has not played with it? He had no idea. When he died. It was just beginning to, you know, ship plastic bricks, I think, globally. But I don't think they had American manufacturing yet. Anyway.
I want to say, though, on that, that's really interesting because I'm thinking of, you know, Phil and Diane, my in-laws. They started Intentional, but it was a Friday night and Saturday, like, helping parents situation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They never had any thoughts or even ideas that it would become even what it's become already in their time. And think about, you know, they're at the giving their death away stages. They're in the older stages of their life. There's a chance, you know, they won't be here to see what it's even becoming fully. And I think that's actually a beautiful, that's actually a part of their legacy in a big way too. And I think there's a lot of that, those types of things where you realize like, did they start it for them? Yes. Yeah. Did they start it for the future? It turns out, yes. They also, though, I think this is another detail that they thought of, is like they had to have a succession plan.
Oh, good.
So let me say this.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Yes, but because here's an example. How many of you listening are involved with churches? A personality starts a church. They've gotten older and older and older. It's been built around that personality, and that personality has no succession plan.
Yes.
And why that is terrible.
Listen up, y'all. This is bad. This is bad. Turn over the reins. Mentor people. But invite them in. Don't be scared of the young. Sorry. I'm tangenting. Go ahead. This is important.
I know. I can tell you're passionate. But it's to say like it is so... It's not just sad. It feels wrong when you see that because it is such a deep selfishness to not think about how this can be not about you. And you haven't taken enough time to not make this about you that you literally, because it's built on you, you literally haven't taken the time to think about what a gift this could be if you could just step out of it. There's going to be a time in your life, friend. And I say this because I get to, I have this wonderful, I have a handful of older people that I get to be around and do life with, not just Phil and Diane, others that I try to bring in my life. And somebody had told me, a mentor the other day, had said, there's going to be a time when you're going to be really tempted to think everyone in the room wants your opinion and no one's going to want it anymore.
Ooh.
And you'll still be alive to see this. And you'll be tempted to be like, oh, everyone wants to know what I think and they will not care.
Yes.
He said, get ready for that right now.
A lot of us and a lot of our leaders, I think, know at least technically that, and they say, and we'll talk in terms of that they can't do what they long to do without God's help, which is true. It's very true. It's obviously correct. I think many of them don't know that they can't do what they long to do without the people of God's help.
Yes.
All right. So I'm trying to draw a distinction.
Yeah.
Any great institution, any great vision, any great vocation should understand that it can't be accomplished outside of communal work.
Yes.
This is so, so deeply antithetical to our cultural mood of celebrity right now.
Yep.
Where people really do get convinced that it's their YouTube platform or their Instagram handle or their author's name or that this pastor, this name is why this works. And they're like, no, I couldn't do this without God. And like, of course you can't, dude. We know that. You know what you also can't do? You can't do this without the people of God, which means you can't do this without the next generation. You can't do this without help. You can't do this without untangling your greedy fingers from the reins and giving them over to the next people who are going to help you do this.
Yes.
And you're breaking everything that you made by not knowing how to hand it over. Not understanding that you won't finish the symphony, bro.
Never.
You need the next writer.
Yes.
This is a relay race. You're not running it alone. David couldn't build the temple. Solomon came. God has a plan that is bigger than you. And this is where I think it helps us to think about our vocation now is how are we setting it up so that we are integrated with other people in institutions that will go on longer than us, that are collectively trusting in the spirits of God, the spirit of God's work. And not just doing our thing. Like, no one cares about your platform
when you're dead,
as much as you. And by the way, there will be a moment when people, when you hear your name for the last time, and then you'll die. And then there will be a moment in history where someone says your name for the last time.
That is
crazy. And you're buried in the rubble.
Yeah.
Like, no one will know your name anymore. No one will even say it. That you're like, the generations will be too long for people to even uncover your name. And your hope has to be in the kingdom of heaven, like finding the tree, because otherwise this is so depressing.
Well, I'm thinking of our conversation. This is kind of an intimate thing, but it's the conversation that we have with Rollheiser after we got done with the interview. If you remember, let me say this. When you get amped up, he's like, yeah, I love it. He's like exercise, but vocally. He said to us, I remember, We thanked him just as two men that are in a different stage of life.
Was
in
this
our middle
after
years.
We stopped recording?
Yeah.
So people didn't hear this?
No.
Okay.
And we basically were just thanking him and saying, you know, we just so appreciate your work. Mm-hmm. It has been such a gift to both of us in different ways. It's shaped us in different ways. And we, before we ever knew each other, were being influenced by his work. And he just simply said, it's yours now to take, guys. You got to take it.
Cool.
Take all of this, make it yours, apply it, give it to the other people. It's for it. He literally was like,
we were like, me?
I was crying. He's like, Dad?
We're like pointing across the Zoom screen, like, somebody off my shirt, me?
Exactly. It was exactly what it felt like. I won't even say that it felt like hyper prophetic or spiritual as much as it felt like
kind.
It was just like, it is actually yours to take now. Yeah. Take all this stuff. Don't waste it. Like, it was almost like, don't waste all this. I've done a lot of work.
It was a blessing.
It was.
You think?
Oh, I was going to say that it felt like him blessing us to say, take that stuff. It's yours now to take. Your generation needs you, is what he was saying. And I felt like if I never talk with him again, I feel like there was almost this commissioning of like, do the work. Mm. And I think this is what, like, Ronald, in that moment, and we got that quote, by the way, it's a Karl Barth quote that he quotes in one of his books, that Ron Rollheiser quotes in his book. That's where I first came across it is it's him talking, like Rollheiser talks about that. And in that moment, I want to share that story because that is the exact thing that we're talking about. He knows that he cannot complete the work that God's given him to do. He's actually in a cancer journey right now. He's, he doesn't know how much time he has left. Mm-hmm. And he is literally saying, my symphony is not going to be finished, but here's one of the ways I'm going to help it by giving and commissioning guys like you to take it and to move on. And so I think that's a hyper important detail. And so I want to say that this is a big, big, big part of this. I have one more thing. I want you to say whatever your thoughts on this. I have one more thought on unfinished symphonies as it relates to family, but sure what you're going to share before.
I was actually going to intertwine it with family a little bit. So let's both, because this moves us into our third question. Yeah. But I was just thinking about how, you know, our favorite moment of every story, every movie, is that moment when a parent, often a father, looks at a child and says, I'm dying. I can't do this anymore. It's up to you now.
Hmm.
And they're like, I can't do it. I need you. And there's this beautiful like concept of handing it over, passing it off.
Yes.
And it is neither side is ever prepared for it, which is why we need to be thinking about it now and always.
Hmm.
What's the succession plan? That's the handoff plan. How is what I'm doing bigger than me, so big that only God and the people of God
yes
could carry this forward? Yep.
Well, that's what Phil and Diane were doing with Intentional. When they first asked us to come on, we're like, no, I don't want to do this. It was all of that mixed up for me. And they knew like this will not go anywhere unless we hand it to the generation that needs to do it. But it's only going to really work while we're still present and alive and full of all of our wits to be able to help.
You can do it earlier than you think you need to do it.
Yes. Yeah. And when I hear of leaders in their upper 60s or even 70s when they have different health complications and they have no plan, I'm telling you, men, please hear me. It is not okay. If you are working in a team and there's no succession plan and you are working on that team, that is a ship that's going down. Because when that personality flops, could you recover? Potentially, but you are taking a risk. And I think you don't even understand how big of a deal it is.
And what'd you call this a couple episodes back? Like negative learning or?
Negative development. Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, probably a lot of you hearing this and like, yeah, see, I know. Tell my boss when my boss listened to this and you're like, yeah, I mean.
Most of them won't because they are the kind of personality type that doesn't think they need to learn.
They probably won't, but you can learn from it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
All right. So let's wrap these two and close with our third. You need to have a hope in what you're building, not an anxiety over the future.
Yes.
You need to have a humility in what you can't build, not a pride in everything that you can. Okay. So many of us dads are defined by our anxious pride rather than our humble hope. And when you have that humble hope over what you're building, but what you can't build.
Yes.
That's when we come to this third question and say, it's comfortable to live with you. So the question for this third question for you, fathers, is what does it feel like to live with you while you're trying to build what you're building? This is really important. Like what's normal? Like how would your family describe you? And don't, you know, some of you are feeling guilt, shame, shock, whatever. Some of you want to avoid the question, but that's what it feels like when grace starts to work in your life. Yeah, you're like, oh no, absolutely. I need to change.
Yes.
But because some of you, like me, have made excuses for a long time of like, well, this is the startup phase or I need to learn this, or this is what it takes for me to provide, or this is my manager or my boss's fault. This is this firm's fault, whatever. I hear like most of my last decade has been characterized by thinking it probably doesn't feel great to live with me right now.
Has that been true? It probably doesn't feel great. Have you been confirmed that it's not great?
Oh yeah. Well, I think Lauren would confirm. Like, okay, yeah,
a lot. So it's like, not just that it's not just internal, it's external.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, I mean, I think probably Lauren knows that, you know, my going too hard in parts of our vocation has caused a lot of pain for her and our family.
Sure.
I think I've started to do well enough that my kids are starting to be shielded from the pain, but I carry the constant tension of like, I can't just take my frustration out on the family. Like, this went wrong at work. I'm frustrated over this. I'm not living up to X. My unfinished symphony sucks. Yeah. And then you come home and you kick the dog and yell at the kids. You're like, no.
Well, yeah.
It's your job, Dad, to act like Jesus. That is, you take the pain, you hold the stress so that your kids can have life to the full. And this question explores that. It's what does it feel like to live with you?
Yes.
And I think, you know, what are the answers for that? Like, how do we work on this?
A couple of things. I think the unfinished symphony can also play into this because it's an angst thing. Like what you just said, the unfinished symphony sucks. I think when
the part that I finished sucks.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also just sometimes naming and accepting the fact that certain things are just never going to be what you want is actually one of the things that helps living with you be a more palpable, pleasant experience. Let me just give you a for instance. There's a lot of disappointments you are going to collect in adulthood, especially fatherhood. And these can be disappointments like, my marriage isn't what I thought it was going to be. Mm. My job is not what I'd hoped it to be. Mm. I'm not doing the things I'd love to do. My hobbies suck. My friend group is hard. I live in a hard place. My church isn't great. These are things that are going to come up over and over and over again. And that's a small menu of a very large one that you could make. And insert your own disappointment. But I also think why it's important to highlight that there are unfinished symphonies in the world when it comes to even your vocation and handing on what you're doing. There's unfinished symphonies in your family that are just things that need to be named and noted.
Mm.
And what I'm going to say about that, because this is my story versus maybe this isn't the general one, but there's been a lot of times where I've been like, man, my kid's health is not what I wanted. It's very hard to, like, it's really disappointing. Man, my wife is sick all the time. I didn't know how much I was going to be a caretaker. Like, that feels like a very unfinished symphony. And if I just, like, get really angry that these things are not the way that I had hoped them to be.
Yes.
And I'm looking for them to be a finished symphony. I'm just going to be angry at everybody and everything all the time, which, by the way, FYI, does happen at times because I'm human and it's hard to hold all of it. So I'm saying the unfinished symphony, when it comes to living with you, it's not just your vocation. It's also you naming how has the family that I actually have and the person who I actually am, how is that like impacting me? Am I like harboring resentment, bitterness? Have I not accepted that this is the wife I have? These are the kids I have. And that doesn't mean that you need to have like some sort of pity party or they're terrible and you're the best. And I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying you in every relationship are going to have a level of both blessing and pain. And it's being able to say, this is who God's given me. And this is my stewardship thing and my issue of stewardship. And I think that makes you a much more pleasant person to be around when you're not constantly angry or critical about the people that are in your world, and you're accepting that even your family is an unfinished symphony.
Yeah.
And it's simply to say, I think even asking that this question should hopefully raise in you, in my personal opinion, an awareness that you might be actually hard to live around. And if you are at all curious, if you are, I bet you if you were humble enough to ask that question, the people that love you most would give you some pretty honest feedback. And it might be better than you think. It might be worse than you think. I'm just saying it's a pretty easy thing to find out.
I think this is connected to a verse we read in the last episode, I believe, on Hobby.
Which one?
Ecclesiastes 2, 24 and 25. And then I'm going to pair it with Ecclesiastes 9. This is Ecclesiastes 2. A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This, I see, is from the hand of God. For without God, who can find or eat enjoyment? And then Ecclesiastes 9, the author expounding on the same idea. Go eat your food with gladness and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for God has already approved what you do. Enjoy life with your wife. You love all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days, for this is your life, your lot in life. I could go on.
Yes.
The reason Ecclesiastes is so powerful and powerfully brilliant is because it merges these two ideas of saying, even in this vapor, the hebel, I think is the Hebrew word, the vanity of this like confusing cloud that it is to be you with all your image of God brokenness, like all your potential and all your wasted potential, all your ambition and all your failure and pride. Nonetheless, the call of the Christian life is to joy, to enjoy life with your wife, to find merriment and gladness in your toil, knowing that, actually a lot of it is meaningless. A lot of it is frustrating. I suck at most of this. but that knowledge of what you cannot do and what only God can do leads you not to anxious pride, but rather to humble hope, which makes you a soft, glad, gracious, and joyful person. Like, that's men who we want to become. As Brooke and I, we want to become this. We want you to become this. A man who, as they grow older, grows more approachable by his wife and children, more soft, more joyful, more prone to merriment. He laughs a lot. He probably cries a lot. He's softer. He's not bitter. He's less controlling. He's more open. This is the idea that you're leaving a legacy of what it feels like to be you, where, you're working on that incredible company, but your kids will never remember what the bottom line was. Like, they will never remember, oh my gosh, she hit this metric. They will remember whether you laughed at the dinner table or whether you were zoned out. They will remember the trips you took them on because you were willing to take time off. They will remember the joy you took in work, not because of all that you were accomplishing, but just because it's good to take joy in your toil.
Yeah. Yes.
What does it feel like to live with you? And so think through, it actually would be great for you to name right now. Where are the places in your life where it's not feeling good to live with you in your vocation?
Ooh.
Well, and I think, like, if you connect them, Brooke, I mean, probably the answers are going to lie, hopefully, if we did a good job, somewhere in the former episodes that we already recorded, right?
There you go. Yes. That hopefully, if you're wondering, how does all this play out? I mean, that was one of our hopes with going through this extensively, is to try to name, identify, and work through. And honestly, there's more, but I think this is at least a comprehensive idea. This is almost 10 hours of content that would hopefully give you a very clear idea of calling, vocation, a passion, ambition, all, and where it plays out and all that. But to just say this, if you are missing at home, you've missed it at work.
Mm.
I mean, like, you want to sum up this whole thing. If you miss being a husband that's present and loving to your spouse, if you miss being the kind of dad that can not pass on more pain, but less, your job, your work that makes you money, you've honestly, if you've missed the family thing, you've missed the work thing. Yeah. And so you have to get these priorities right. And I'm not saying like have to, like, gentlemen, you got it. Like, it's just saying like that you want that. That's the good life. That's the full life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important as we even end this season to just simply say, Justin and I are two dads who are trying. We are not two dads who have got this figured out, mm-hmm. who are excellent experts on this. And if you just listen to everything we do and say, you will be just fine. It is messy for us, dude. I'm about to fly home. I've been gone for 8 days in total with two different trips. I'm already getting texts. Like, my family is going to need a lot, and I'm really tired, and reentry is hard. And I mean, like, I'm doing the ministry for family, and I'm going to go back, and my first knee-jerk reaction is going to be just like rude and grumpy to my family. Mm. I'm just telling you, like, that's what I'm actually in my body prepping for. Not because I want to be that way, but because I know that's my tendency. So I'm trying. So I'm just telling you, like, this is the reality of what it looks like. It is not clean. It is not like prescriptive. This is a journey that you have to go on. And I think the more that we name these unfinished symphonies, and the more we actually ask the question, what is it like to be around me? That is probably one of the most humbling, hard, and beautiful questions for you to ask. And if you end all of this with, hey, work folks that I lead, or even the team that you're on, what's it like to work with me? Family, what's it like to experience me? And if you take that feedback with humility and pray it in, you will become such a wonderful mm-hmm. human. Mm-hmm. If you can go through that process over and over and over again, because that shows humility, kindness, grace, that you're trying to improve. So there's a lot that we could say. There's a lot that we could try to add to this. If you are a person who is hearing this, I just want to encourage you, do not try to bite off more than you can chew. This is a process. Some of you hearing are going to be like, yes, I don't even have kids yet. I'm amped. I'm ready. Like, dude, take a breath. It takes time. Justin and I are like, you're 41 right now. I'm 40. I turned 41 this year. Like, this has taken so much of our last 20 years, really, to get to a spot to where we're like, okay, I kind of feel like I might be mm-hmm. not failing all the time.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it feels like, if I'm being honest.
That's actually a good description.
Yeah. So if you kind of feel like you're completely failing, or like just still failing, just not as much, good company, safe yeah. place.
I think I remember there was some passage in my first book, The Common Rule, where I was talking about how frustrating everything feels. I was writing it at 33, 34, I can't remember.
Yeah.
And I remember the editor actually wrote a note in the margin, just a personal note. He was like, don't worry, this gets better. I think he was in his 40s. And I would actually say to all you guys listening, I don't know where you are at. I think a lot of you are probably, you know, late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s. That's great.
Mm.
We're just maybe a couple years ahead of you. But our whole like shtick since season one has been, if it feels like fatherhood is the hardest thing that you've ever done, it's because it is.
It is.
It's full of tension because it's full of such great possibility.
Mm.
It's full of difficulty because it is such a high calling. And your work is like this.
Mm-hmm.
If you understand the theology we laid out, that work is good, that you have a calling, you need to form it, that ambition is good, but you're going to be beset by sins.
Mm.
That's hard work.
Yes.
And you're going to feel like, oh, how do you do this? Go back and listen to those three episodes and think through dream, cultivate a big hope. Mm. If you're hearing us talk and say, you know, what does it feel like to live with you? And you're like, not good. I care so much about money, or my time, like I'm so unproductive or lazy, or like I'm not a good leader in the workplace. I don't have spiritual disciplines. Mm. I have horrible boundaries with my family, whatever it is. I just literally listed our episodes 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Yeah. And we tried to make them practical so that you can go think about them and say, which area do I need to work on? Yes. Why? Because we want you to live a legacy of good work around your family.
Yes.
Being a worker is going to be one of the most important things that your family ever sees you do. Mm. And being a dad who is present, despite being a worker who is ambitious, is going to be the most important feeling that you ever create in your family. And we don't want you to separate them. We want you to do them together. It is hard, but I do think hopefully we stand here and saying we've fumbled around a lot in the last decade of being parents and workers.
Still fumbling.
Still fumbling quite a bit, but I do see
growth.
I do. Sanctification is real. Mm. And I'm so grateful that God and the people of God are surrounding me, because I not only would I be an awful worker and an awful father without God and the people of God, I don't know that I'd be here to do it. Like I'd, you know, there's serious questions of what would be true of my life without the church and without God. But with your guys, like go find them, go listen to this together, go talk to your friends, pray. Like get in the word and think about this, because with God and with the people of God, sanctification is real. Praise God, grace exists. Mm. You don't have to be the way you are today, tomorrow. Like you can change, and that is really, really good news.
I wonder if we end this season with a short, a brief, each of us, short prayer of blessing over everybody that's listening to this episode, but also through this season, and basically praying it in. I know this, I'm throwing this out there right now, but I think we should do that. And if you want to start, I can close this, but it doesn't have to be long, but just prayer of blessing. And so men, if you're listening, just men and women listening, please, this is for you. We just want to take this and pray this in, because it's only by the power of the Spirit that we can fully live this out.
Amen. Here is your benediction. Lord God, Jesus, Spirit of God, would you be with these men in their work? Mm. Would you give them big godly ambitions? Would you save them from their besetting sins? Would you help them to steward their time, steward their money, intertwine spiritual disciplines in their work? Would you call them to great things and let them live with great humility as they do it with you and with others? Bless them, bless the work of their hands, we pray.
And Father, and Father, I just ask that you would please heal what needs healing, bring hope where there needs to be hope, humility where there needs to be humility, help where there needs to be help. Jesus, we ask for all of this, because these men and these sisters listening, these wives, we all need it. And God, we just ask for now a fresh filling of your Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. I just ask that anyone that is even listening to this right now would just have a new, fresh filling of you, Holy Spirit, a new help, a new focus, a new perspective, and that anyone that would even be hearing this prayer, whether they're in a car or on a walk or just even at the gym, that they would just hear your Spirit washing over them, feel your help, feel the change happening in their body, in their mind, in their soul. And God, would you just bless the works of their hands? I pray that there would be a generation upon generation upon generation of kids that come from the men and women listening right now that would change the world for your glory. And we pray this for not only your glory, but our good. Amen.
Amen.